This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
Oh, damn.
Cover, kept it on the low. Said that you meant nothing, but my feelings really grew. Not that I regret you, but I met you when insane. Yeah. Didn't need forever, but I needed just a call. Every night at 3 a.m. I'm banging on your door, crying on the marble where we used to fuck till dawn.
To the Callum McSwiggan Show. Today I am joined by, I'm going to call you a media mogul. I don't know if that's correct, Matt, but that's what I'm going to call you.
Call me what you want, darling.
I'm joined by the incredible Matt Kane, author of The Madonna of Bolton. It's a pleasure to have you here, Matt.
It's a pleasure to be here, Callum.
I want to dive right in and get talking about your book.
Okay, great, let's go.
But before we talk about the content of the book and why you wrote it, etc., I want to talk about the kind of, I guess, I don't know if drama is the right word, but when you were releasing the book, I know that initially you had some problems about the book being considered too gay. The publishing world, I guess, wasn't quite ready for
your
book.
Diplomatically you say that. It was rejected over 30 times, darling.
We don't like the term rejection.
How's that for some problems? You're absolutely right. I wrote the first draft in something like 2008, started sending it to publishers through, I basically had three rounds of submissions with three different agents over 10 years. Everybody turned it down. Lots of them said it was too gay and that mainstream straight audiences, particularly female readers, wouldn't be able to empathise with a central character in his story. And to be honest, they may have had a point in 2008. By the time publishers were rejecting it in 2016, and Sam Smith has the biggest selling album of the year singing about a man, every time you watch Corey or EastEnders or Emmerdale, it's always gays.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just like, this isn't the case anymore. So I took it to a crowdfunding publisher, said I wanted to break their record for crowdfunding a novel.
Well, what was it? Unbound?
It was Unbound.
Unbound, yeah.
We did it. Their record was 2 weeks. We did it in one.
Oh, wow.
Kicked up a kind of big stink and in the mainstream media and in social media, and then got a mainstream release, and it's gone really well since. But yeah, it's funny, isn't it? When you think about it now, it seems so weird, especially as it's done so well,
yeah,
that publishers would think it was too gay.
It's interesting because recently I've kind of been going through the whole like publishing route as well myself. And months back, we submitted my manuscript as well, and we got very much the same kind of feedback. You know, this is a little bit too gay. I was trying to, you know, push my book as a travel memoir, and they were basically saying, no, you either have to take this, you know, fully into the gay niche and be in that niche and just be a gay book, or you can't do it, essentially, because, you know, as we are gay men, it's like we can't tell our stories without being pushed into a gay niche. And I think that's a little bit unfair. Like, did you find that a little bit disheartening?
Oh, I think it's more than disheartening. I think it's absolutely outrageous. And also, these people, to be perfectly honest, Callum, these people do not know what they are talking about. Mm. Publishing is so old-fashioned and stuck in its ways and not dynamic. You know, all the kind of drive towards diversity of all kinds for all the different types of voices on TV and in the print media and in film and all these different areas, theatre, they have no idea.
Yeah.
They think because I've got a northern accent, publishers, that it's radical and that it's a working class voice. Yeah. I remember having a meeting with my last publisher to talk about the publicity campaign for a book, and it was summer, and this builder walked past with no top on. He was absolutely drop dead gorgeous. And I said to the girls in the room, get a load of that, girls, isn't he fit? And everybody looked at me and went, oh! As if I'd said the most outrageous thing ever.
Really?
I'm like, you guys haven't heard anything yet. They literally think it is radical to be gay in 2018. And I'm really sad to hear that you're having the same reaction as I did, because they're obviously just not, still not taking notice. Mm.
And I think it's frustrating as well, because we are seeing incredibly successful books now. We're seeing like Call Me By Your Name, Simon vs. the Homo Sapien Agenda, etc. And they're doing so well, and it's not just reaching an LGBT plus audience, it's reaching, you know, audiences everywhere of all different groups.
Well, what they don't realise is that, you know, the woman, the Supreme Court judge when in the US, when they gave us equal marriage, she said something like, we are doing this because we've all learnt that you are like us. We've all got gay neighbours, gay brothers, gay colleagues. And that is the case now, that more and more people come out and live visible lives. That is more and more the case in this country. And people don't have any kind of barrier to empathy with the gay experience anymore, or certainly a lot less so. But publishers, it's outrageous, some of the things that they say. And also, as if, you know, when they say that to you about the gay audience, as if they don't deserve to be served.
No, totally. And it's an enormous audience who like to spend money as well. You know, typically the pink pound, you know, that's a thing.
Well, I thought, should I tell you why? Part of the reason I crowdfunded this book was because when I was editor-in-chief of Attitude, I looked at our social media channels, and, you know, we had something like 140,000 on Instagram, way more than that on Twitter, 800,000-odd on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I thought, right, to have a best-selling book in this country, because publishers don't do their job very well, it only takes about 30,000, 35,000 to sell.
Yeah.
I thought, right, you have got an audience there, and these books can be bestsellers. And they don't know what they're talking about. They literally don't know what they're talking about. They are so old-fashioned and stuck in their ways. That industry is so white, upper middle class. Mm. When I went to a publishing party once, I sound like I'm ranting now, like some old banshee on a soapbox, but I went to a publishing party once run by another publisher. I won't tell you who they were. There were 700 people there who worked for the publisher, their writers and their agents. And I was looking around. I saw one black face who wasn't a glass collector or a waiter. Wow. And I said to this senior editor there, I said, I don't understand how this can be a party to celebrate the success of this publisher. And I can't see anybody who's not white. And he said, oh, I'm sure we've got an assistant in the finance department who's mixed race.
Oh, my gosh. Like, in the finance department, that's making no impact on what they're doing.
But that was fine, because they had one mixed race woman out of 700.
It's outrageous.
And that they're saying to you that their marketing people or their business people can't look at your followings and your social media channels and the reach of this show, and they can still say that you're non-commercial. I mean, it's just bullshit.
It is bizarre. But I'm hoping that that world will catch up. You know, we're seeing in TV and movies and things that they seem to be coming around slowly. I mean, it's still a lot of progress to be made. But I would think the literary world would also catch up.
Well, what I need to do is, so my book's out in hardback and it's been a big hit and that's great. But hardback, it's not the mainstream format. It needs to come out in paperback, which isn't until the spring.
So are you doing another campaign around that?
So I'm going to do another big blast.
Yes.
And hopefully when it's in all the supermarkets and everybody's buying it in paperback and it sells in big numbers, and once the film goes into production...
Which is
happening and is very exciting.
Oh,
it's
my gosh. That's amazing.
I can kind of shove two fingers up at them and have the last laugh. Yeah, because it got so much attention around the crowdfunding campaign, I sold the film rights, unbelievably, to the producers of A Star Is Born, the Lady Gaga Bradley Cooper
amazing
film. And... yeah, I mean, it's just, like, unbelievable, you know. And look at that, the film industry, they've learned lessons.
Yeah.
They've learned lessons about the... you know, commercial possibilities of films like Love, Simon, Call Me By Your Name, like you say, Moonlight, Brokeback Mountain I watched the other day.
Huge, yeah.
You know, and they've learnt those lessons, but publishing hasn't. But don't give up, darling. You've got to take them on.
I won't give up. So let's actually talk about The Madonna of Bolton, and let's talk about the content of the book without giving anything away. So what inspired this story? I want to talk about Madonna specifically, because I will say something that will upset you a great deal.
You don't like her?
No. I don't. I'm just going to come out and say I didn't understand the whole Madonna thing, and I think... I don't know. I think I was just kind of unaware of her impact, especially on young gay people. And it wasn't until I actually got invited by a friend to go and see her in concert on World AIDS Day at the O2 a couple of years ago. And
I was there.
Were you there as well?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I went along and I was like, well, yeah, Madonna, she makes some good songs. I don't really know that much about Madonna or her history, but I thought, you know what, I'll go along. It sounds like fun. And I went and I was absolutely blown away by her. And it was when she stopped to take a moment to talk about World AIDS Day.
Yeah, I remember. And she talked about one of her sons. His parents had died of AIDS.
Yeah, and like the fact that she addressed that so empathetically, and she clearly had such a knowledge around the issues, like she clearly understood. And at that moment, it clicked for me. Suddenly I understood why she is such an incredible ally and why so many people looked up to her.
Well, the truth is, I think there's two things. First of all, if you look at her as an artist, she's in some ways her own worst enemy, because she for years didn't like celebrating her back catalogue and her legacy, because she didn't want to draw attention to how long she'd been around. She didn't want to become a nostalgia artist. Well, therefore, as a result of that, people forgot a lot of the stuff that she did. And actually, if you just look at her as an artist, in terms of the songs, the videos, the looks, the art of reinvention, the concert tour, the Blonde Ambition template, every pop star follows now still. She did it all first and she was amazing. But in terms of her as an LGBT ally, it was interesting on World AIDS Day this year. I don't know if you saw her post on Instagram. She had several really close friends who died of AIDS, but one in particular, her best friend. She was with him on the day he died. He was only 23, Martin Burgoyne. She's written songs about him. The mentor who was her dance teacher was gay, who took her to a lot of dance clubs, gay clubs at the end of the 70s, and that's what... you know, that's where she found her voice. Keith Haring, the artist, the graffiti artist, was a close friend of hers. She, from the beginning, was doing AIDS benefit concerts. It's really, if you weren't there in the 80s, yeah, my book is partly about if you have a hard time for whatever reason in your life, whether it's domestic violence, divorce, addiction, depression, anything, and you cling on to a pop icon to kind of get you through, you know, that attachment emotionally that a lot of us feel to our favourite pop singer, that's partly what it's about. But in my case, which it's based on, growing up gay in a world which rejected me, the only pop star I could have had as a spirit guide was Madonna, because if you weren't there in the 80s, it's really difficult to describe, but we were literally loathed and despised, and you know, people were bringing, the government was bringing in laws against us so we couldn't corrupt children, people thought we were sexual predators, we spread disease, we couldn't be trusted around children, and basically this was a time when artists like Freddie Mercury, he was great, I love him, he couldn't come out. He didn't feel he could come out in his lifetime. He never came out. George Michael didn't come out until he was outed in the late 90s. You know, nobody would come out. There was a handful. And Madonna, in terms of mainstream artists, Madonna was the biggest star in the world, and she was waving the flag. She was parading her gay dancers, her gay brother. She had gay characters in her videos from the beginning, sailors with their arms around each other.
Yeah.
You know, right from the beginning, she was doing AIDS benefit concerts. When she did the film In Bed With Madonna, which was behind the scenes on the Blonde Ambition tour, six of her seven dancers were gay. She filmed them French kissing. This is 1990. She filmed them French kissing at Gay Pride. And when interviewers said to her, "This is irresponsible, you are promoting gayness to your impressionable fans," she absolutely took them down.
Good, too,
and
right,
it's
yeah.
really... It's impossible to understate that in terms of her role as an ally. You know, people talk about RuPaul's Drag Race and how amazing it is that it's drawn on that underground subculture from New York of the Harlem Ball Circuit and the drag queens.
But Madonna's been doing that the whole time.
Madonna did this in Vogue in 1990. Yeah. And it was black and Latino drag queens that she was just parading in front of the world and doing a song about gay culture and how we escaped on the dance floor. It was amazing. And I like to think my book does have a universal quality that anybody will be able to get it, even if they don't like Madonna. But it's fascinating that you say that, because I think a lot of people don't realize.
Yeah, totally, 100%. Well, I'm so thrilled that, you know, Madonna inspired all of this in you, and you know, inspired you growing up, but also inspired the book that you have today.
She saved my life, darling. I don't think I'd be here now if it wasn't for her.
I have a little treat for you, but before we do that, we're going to have a little bit of music. So this is a little bit of Power Slide.
Suburban party, 'cause his neighbors let us use the pool. He gave me pleasure underneath the water, and it felt so good. Now we're power sliding till the flat spots stop us. They call the cops on us. The time tick tocks, he dropped me off. Summer's over when I die. For masculine, but that's not why I like it. No, 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 no. We share a couple cigarettes before we go to bed, and you got the plastic. That's fucking fantastic. Now we're power slide until we can both pass out. You got the TV on with the volume down for colors in the background. Summer's over when I die. Can let go of the heat, can let go of your hand. I roll into the deep end, 'cause I wanna feel the wind blow while I ride. Sun's up like this, and you're good at transition. Summer's over when I die. Can let go of the heat, can let go of your hand. I roll into the deep end, 'cause I wanna feel the wind blow.
takes a puff from his cigarette. He's looking tough and so friendly. I'm in, get lost. Stop, I'm taking your picture. Crack a smile through the lens. My God, I swear this is perfect. Let the sunset take it long.
All right, Matt, are you ready for a game?
I am ready for a game. I'm always game, darling.
We are going to be playing a little bit of Porn or Not Porn. And as you are such an enormous Madonna fan, we have got a Madonna-themed Porn or Not Porn this week.
Fantastic. Can I just say one confession, though, before we start?
Yes.
I am literally the only gay man I know who doesn't watch any porn.
Well, that's interesting.
So I may be unqualified. I don't know what it is. I'm literally like the least prudish person ever.
It's just not for you.
I've just never been into porn. No, it's never done it for me.
You're not the first person to come on this show and say that.
Oh, really?
So you're not alone. There are other people like you who have maybe dabbled and gone, no, actually, this isn't for me. I consume porn like my life depends on it. So for our lovely listeners, if you don't know how this game works, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sound clips here. Some of them have been taken from porn and some of them have been taken from Madonna. So it may be music videos, it may be interviews.
What if it was Madonna doing kind of porn? Some
could
of her
be,
porny videos
could be,
or films.
Could be, exactly. I don't know the answers either, so we're going to be working together to figure this out. And our lovely producers are going to tell us the answers. So I think we should dive right in.
Absolutely.
Our first one is... I think you're going to be very good at this, by the way. Your face is already lit up, like you know something.
Yeah, well, I can go into YouTube black holes for days once I start Googling old Madonna stuff. Are we allowed to listen again?
Yeah, of course we are. Here we go.
I don't think that's poem.
Don't you? You think this is a like Madonna interview or something?
That sounds to me like in an interview when she's being a bit flirtatious.
Yeah. That giggle at the start sounds very porny, though. Listen. It does sound... But it could be Madonna. It could go either way.
I'm going to say not porn.
I'm going to side with you on this because you are the Madonna expert and I feel like you would know if it wasn't her voice.
The pressure. Can you imagine if I can't spot her voice now? I fall at the first hurdle, the most basic test.
You'll have to rename your book. let's say not porn.
Okay.
I believe in you. Okay, we are saying that this is not porn. This is indeed Madonna. Not porn. Madonna laughs when an interview asks if she creates her own looks and she says, do you think someone else could come up with this? And then laughs and tells him he doesn't have an answer to that. Have you seen this interview?
Yay! I'm sure I've literally seen them all.
Amazing. All right, so 1 out of 5. See if we can get 5 out of 5. I'll be very impressed. Our next one.
Come on.
Oh, come on. That has to... porn, surely?
That's,
no?
That's got to be porn,
hasn't
it?
It has to be.
Come on.
Oh, I'm like, or maybe it's in any of her music videos. Is there like a fight scene or is there like a guy putting his hands on her and she doesn't want it?
Yeah, but don't forget also, she did, she's done kind of porny stuff. I mean, she's done videos like Erotica, Justify My Love that were basically considered porn at the time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She did the whole sex book, which was exploring a woman's desires and it was soft porn. She had her minger and everything.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. And she did
I
a
love
film.
Madonna.
Oh, God. People talk about like Miley Cyrus twerking. I mean, Madonna did a book in 1992 of naked photographs. She's like hitchhiking at the side of the road in Miami naked.
That's
She's
amazing.
She's got her fanny out on the beach.
I love
it. Totally. But she also did this film that was fucking terrible called Body of Evidence, where she played this woman who, this serial killer who fucked her victims to death.
Wow. I love it.
So actually, I mean, that was like a really X-rated film, but... If, you know, so it could be from a scene from that, but you could also consider that porn.
Yeah. Should we listen again?
Yeah.
Okay, listen very carefully.
Come on.
That's porn.
Come on.
Do you think porn?
I think that's porn.
Okay, I'm going to go with you. It sounds like porn to me. Yeah, okay, we are saying porn. Final answer. It is not porn. This is Madonna starred in the movie Swept Away. Is that the one you meant?
No. It's a different one.
So in one
another raunchy, bad one.
In one raunchy scene, a fisherman comes after her on the beach and demands she admits her burning desire for him as he undresses her.
He's really hot too.
Sounds a bit rapey though. Sounds a bit like borderline consent issues.
Funnily enough, it was a bit that film. It was a bit dodgy on that.
Different time though, I guess. You know?
Not that long ago, no. Uh-oh. It was a kind of later one. It was about 2004 or something. But let's gloss over that. But
let's move on.
All right. Oh my God. One right and one wrong. I'm going to pull it back.
All right, our next one is...
Attitude problem.
Excuse me?
Oh, attitude problem. Excuse me. That doesn't sound like Madonna to me, but then I don't know her voice that well.
God, I do. But to be honest, there are quite a few bad films that I've seen like once. You know, that I've seen like once and I wouldn't remember. But the first two have been hurt. Should we say that's porn? Should we have a listen again?
I think.
Attitude problem.
Excuse me?
That he's British, that guy. Correct? Is that a British accent?
Yeah.
So why would... It would surely be an American actor if it was one of her...
Well, don't forget, she lived here for years. She was married to a Brit.
Okay.
It does sound like her voice, actually.
Mm.
Could it be another bad film, though, that I've only
saw one? It could be. Do it one more time.
Attitude problem.
Excuse me?
Ooh. Could go... Oh, it really could go either way. I'm thinking porn, but I also don't want to sway you. Do you think porn?
Let's go porn.
Okay, we are saying that this is from porn. Final answer. It is porn.
Hey! Yay!
This is Smoking Hot Babe with Attitude. A girl is angry that a guy did not release a video he taped of her. He tells her he deleted the video because of her attitude problem, and she wants the video released. They will have to film it again, but this time she must be nice.
Oh my God. This is why I don't watch porn.
I'm glad we didn't say that was Madonna, gonna be honest. All right, our next one is...
What do you think it means?
That's Madonna in an interview. That's Madonna. That is absolutely Madonna. That's an interview where somebody asks her. It's one of her first interviews. It's something like 1983, 1984. An MTV presenter asks her about her tag, boy toy, on her belt buckle.
Ooh.
And he says, what does it mean? She says, what do you think it means? This is my
knowledge. Love it.
I'm such a sad desperado.
I'm going to laugh so much if you're wrong. But I think we're saying that this is not porn. This is what Matt just said it was.
Yeah.
It's exactly what Matt just said. So proud of you for that.
That's really specific, isn't it? A graffiti tag, he asked, what does it mean? I did actually watch that the other day, I have to say. I was Googling Madonna and Keith Haring, the gay graffiti artist who died of AIDS, because there's the first big exhibition of his work in the UK is next summer at Tate Liverpool. Mm. And I was Googling Madonna Keith Haring, and she was wearing some graffiti jacket as well at the time. So anyway, that's why I'm not a sad bastard all the time.
I'm so proud of you, and I feel like you've just won back your title of being the biggest
go,
Madonna
though.
Fan.
We've got one more to
don't
go.
Let us down. Don't let us down. Okay, here it is.
Raining.
That's not Madonna.
Do you not? I thought it was, but then I guess I don't know her.
Raining.
You don't think so?
I don't think that's her, actually.
No.
Don't think so, but it'd be really embarrassing if we end up being 3-2. It's got to be 4-1. If we can be 4 right and 1 wrong, I'll be able to hold my head up high.
Let's hear it again.
Really?
It sounds a bit porny. But then, like you said, it could be from any of those kind of erotic-y...
Yeah.
But if you don't think that's a voice, I think you're the expert.
I don't think that's her voice, but
how about we say that this is porn, and if it does turn out to be not porn, we'll just pretend it didn't happen.
Yes, please.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, we are saying that this is porn. It is! Yes! See, you won back your title.
I love this game. Can we play it all night?
Yeah, sub the rest of the show. We're just going to continue with this. So that was Sexy British Babe Being Punished. A porn actress asks her director if he will be nice to her now that she is on her knees. He says, I'm always nice, unlike you. Do as I say to prove you fixed your attitude. She laughs and says, really.
There's lots of attitude going on in these porn clips today.
The thing I don't like about porn is that I find there's these often quite humiliating divide, borderline consent issues. And like, I know all the actors are consenting and things, but I don't know, it makes me a little bit uncomfortable sometimes. It's not all porn, you know, there's some incredible ethical porn out there, but I don't know, sometimes it's
I totally agree.
A little bit touch and go.
I totally agree. And also, I mean, in fairness to the people who make porn, sometimes some of our fantasies about sex can be quite self-destructive and not very self-respecting. So they might argue that they're responding to that genuine urge from viewers. But I'm not sure even if I had those urges, and I have at various times in my life. I mean, I'm a bit older now and I've worked through all that. But I'm not sure whether I'd want to see it reflected on the screen.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I mean, like I quite openly talk about the fact that I enjoy BDSM.
But I think
I feel like there's some that you know, there's BDSM and getting quite, you know, aggressive and things in the bedroom. But I think there's a very important line where it's consensual. I think there's something actually quite special and intimate about that person opening themselves up and giving you that trust.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that side is very rarely reflected in porn. I feel like you never see that. You never see that. No, you know what? I fully trust you. You know, we have a safe word, etc. That you don't see that, and I think sometimes it kind of misportrays things.
Well, because that's working on the assumption that basically the urge towards BDSM and all those desires are not very self-respecting. Can you only work in safe words and stuff as a means of kind of just, you know, making it more palatable? But actually, as you say, there is a genuine, authentic intimacy at the root of some of those desires.
Definitely,
isn't there?
definitely. Well, what a fun way to end that little game. We are going to be joined by a special guest very shortly, but before that, we're going to have a little bit of Beast of the Night by Cat Bear.
I haven't got time for you. I'd rather spend time by myself. I like me more than you. Don't make me lie the truth. I've got a million nice excuses, and you know I don't mind being alone. I don't care to go out to be judged, and I don't want to take flight with the beast of the night. I can't even dance anyway, doesn't matter.
We are now joined by the absolutely stunning Ann Mikkel. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
It's great to have you here. So we're joined in the studio as well by the incredible Matt Cain, who is just a gay man about town. He's published a book. He used to be editor of Gay Mag. He's done all the things.
Hello, Ann. Good to meet you.
Hi there. Good to meet you too.
So, Ann, we're here to talk about your reality series, which is called Putting On. I like the play on words there. That's very clever. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's a new reality show about following my life, building my underwear company with my ex-boyfriend, and all the you know, hard moments, happy moments, everything in my life. Working with my ex, so why not film it?
Were you already ex-boyfriends when you started this, or was this something that was going to happen when you were together and then you separated?
So actually, we started to work on the company when we were together, and then about a week before, you know, the big process started, like, you know, going to the factory, going to the everything.
Yeah.
Then he decided to break up with me, and we already have cameras kind of documenting the process of the company, so it just turned out as a reality show because it was just unplanned. And
I'm
a surprise.
I'm so intrigued by the concept of it. You know, it sounds like such an interesting journey and such a quite intimate and personal thing to do as well. How did it come to be? You know, did somebody approach you? Did you approach somebody else? Like, how? Because it's such a niche thing, which I love about it. But, you know, how did that come to be?
So I have a lot of friends from, you know, the Hollywood industry, from the TV shows, and one of my friends, he's a producer, Colby. He told me that this story has to be on camera. Like, I was crying to him after the breakup, like, what am I going to do? Like, how am I going to work with him? Blah, blah, blah. And he told me just, like, you know, just be you, keep running your empire, and let's film it, and, you know, you'll find your way. And I said, okay, fine. Like, you know, all, like, my family, friends, everybody told me, keep doing what you do with the company, like, don't stop now. And, you know, go with your heart. And my heart was to keep my ex in the company because we did start it together. It wasn't easy for me, of course, but I'm happy that they made this decision because now I can show everybody that when you're breaking up with somebody, you don't need to hate them and you can move on.
Well, can I ask, the way that you described it, it sounded like, when you said it was unexpected, it sounded like it was an acrimonious breakup that was his decision rather than yours, and therefore it must have been quite a difficult thing for you to carry on doing, especially if he was parading his new men in front of you. I'm not sure I could have done that.
Well, yeah, it was a big surprise. I was, like, ready to get married, actually, but... Yeah, this breakup really kind of, it was the worst days of my life. Like, my mom flew all the way from Israel to New York to, like, get me off the ground and, like, help me get it together. But I, like, you know, I found out I'm a strong person after that. And yeah, like, it was really hard, if this is the question. But again, like, years passed and I'm thankful for everything.
Did you kind of see it as like almost like, you know, filming the series? Was it almost like a silver lining for you, you know, to go through something so awful, but then to have this series based on it? You know, I'd go as far as saying that actually something incredible has come of this. Did the series actually help you through that time?
For sure, I'll say yes, because I wanted to stop filming when it happened, but my producer just, like, you know, told me, keep doing what you do, please don't stop, like, of course, you can see a few moments on the show that I just told the cameras to just, like, step out. I don't want to film it right now. I'm crying or something like that. I didn't want to be on camera weak or not as strong as I'm trying to be. But I am thankful. Like, let's say all the crew and the cameras around me all the time kept me busy than thinking about the breakup and about what's going on and how we're splitting our life right now.
I always find it, I have to say, I always find it really uplifting and heartening when we can go through really difficult periods of our lives, and out of that, something amazing can come. Mm-hmm. And it can always be really, surprising. But you can, you know, I mean, if I wanted to be crass, I would say, at least you got a TV series out of it.
No, for sure, and I really like think that our show is a good thing for our community to show other sides of us, like hardworking people, like, you know, we love relationships. Like, out there, everybody thinks that we're just party people.
Yeah,
and not all of us about that. Like, I'm getting married, so. I'm all about relationships.
You're getting married now. You know, what, to somebody else?
Tell us about the marriage.
To somebody else, yes.
That didn't take long, darling. Who's the new man?
Well, my new man is Dave, and he's amazing. And we got engaged about 4 months ago, and I'm the happiest man right now.
Oh, congratulations.
That's why I'm thankful for my breakup.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I found the right guy for me.
And what was it like growing up as gay? Were you based in Israel, or I know that you were Israeli?
Yeah. I grew up in Israel. I moved to New York when I was 20.
So how was it growing up in Israel? I mean, I don't really know a great deal about being gay in Israel.
So honestly, it's very open. Like, everybody asked me since I was kind of like a teenager, what's going on, and. Mm. I kept it to myself, honestly, till I moved. I felt more comfortable to just, like, I mean, it would be, like, even more dramatic right now, but I came out after this breakup because I just couldn't, like, you know, leak myself, and I thought, like, my world is about to end. So the day after the breakup is the day that I told my mom and I told everybody. But growing up as a gay in Israel, even though I was in the closet, kind of, it was amazing. And even now, I'm even more welcome there. Press, in work, in the, like, that, with my friends, with family. Yeah.
That's incredible. That's really, really incredible. And what's the reaction been like to the series? Because the series came out on November 30th, is that right?
Yes.
So what's the reaction been like?
Everybody, like, amazed, because I really, the past 2 years was a long journey of hardworking success and not, like, and really unsuccessful days. And everybody, like, you know, when they see me on camera and what I'm doing after the breakup, because everybody knows that I was so in such a bad shape back then. So everybody, like, really welcoming and loving. And of course, my family, friends, and also fans, and I don't know, like, everybody who is watching the show, people are really, really nice, and I'm really thankful. Because I thought that my life was boring, but everybody thinks that it's not.
And was there, did anything kind of, going through this process, there must have been so many unexpected turns, but was there anything that particularly stood out, you know, did anything really unexpected happen? I know you maybe don't want to give too much away.
What do you mean about, like, business wise?
Yeah, like, there must have been some bumps in the road.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, you know, as somebody with so many followers on social media, I thought it's like, I'm launching a brand and that's it. I'm going to be sold out in one day. Of course, it didn't happen. This is not how business works. And you're getting upset and you're getting disappointed and you're trying everything you have. I have all these, like, celebrities, girlfriends that was wearing my stuff.
Yeah.
So you have months that you're selling thousands of products, and then you have months that you're selling 2 products. And when you're investing so much money in a company, it can, like, you know, break you sometimes. So I had, like, really bad days, and you know, I'm still having, like, you know, you have amazing days and then you have bad days, but this is business, and I put myself in this world now, so.
But what's that saying? You can't have the rainbow unless you have the rain first.
I love it.
Isn't that true?
Yeah. So it's raining a lot, but yeah, I see a lot of rainbows too.
And is the business still a success today? Is the underwear still going?
Yeah, the underwear is great. It's going, and we're selling now in Europe also, like in France and Middle East, in Israel. I'm launching. I launched a perfume and cosmetic line, and so much more. Like in season two, I can't really share everything, but
that's so exciting.
Yeah,
I'm definitely gonna need to get some of those underwear. Where can people watch? It's on IGTV. Is that right?
So it's on IGTV and on the Reverie app. The IGTV is much easier because you're just going to Reverie TV Instagram, and it's right there. But I'll tell you all and whoever is listening to go to the Reverie app because they have amazing shows besides my show.
And what about your underwear, darling? Where can we buy it?
Well, to you guys, I'm going to send some, but everybody else can buy it on MikaelBrand.com. It's my name and brand.com, the website.
Amazing. And if you can't find any of that, if you hop on over to my Twitter, you'll see it on the FUBAR Radio Twitter as well. All your stuff is over there. So it's been so great having you on the show. You've been such a superstar. And I cannot wait to watch the show putting on. It sounds amazing.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. We'll see you around sometime. See you later.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
All the other ones never stay too long. Just a hit and run, leading me along. Don't tell me you're different.
during that song, that cut off very abruptly, during that song, Matt and I were having a lovely little chat about relationships, and I think, you know, that moves on quite nicely to our final section of the show. This is Sex Confessions. Thank you so much to everyone who has sent in your confessions. If you want to send us confessions for future shows, you can do that by emailing callum@foobarradio.com. It is completely confidential, and, well, it's not confidential because we're saying it on the radio. It's completely anonymous is what I meant to say. So thank you so much to everyone who has sent those in. So, Matt, we are going to read these and react to them. Would you like to read the first one for me?
Okay, the first one is, how do I get my new boyfriend, to take off his hat indoors? He even sometimes wears it during sex. I keep telling him, but it's hard to not pester in a new relationship.
I don't like...
Depends what kind of hat it is. I mean, it could be a hot hat.
Yeah, like a nice little cap. I'd find that quite hot if you wore it during sex. Like, yeah. I think you should thank him.
It's weird, isn't it? It's like when somebody keeps a baseball cap on or something, you know, or like they keep their socks on.
Yeah.
It can sometimes be... Oh, I suppose it is a bit weird, though, isn't it, when they take everything else off?
I don't know if this is the case. I'm guessing here. But when I've shaved my head twice to raise money for cancer research, and when I have, like, no... Because I would do it, like, with a razor all the way down to the scalp.
You put a hat on.
And I would feel really, really insecure. I think a lot of people look great bald, but I don't personally think I do. And I remember hooking up with a guy... while I had like literally zero hair and I had a cap on, and he tried to take it off in the bedroom, and I like got a little bit angry and I was like, no, don't touch it, like, because I felt so insecure.
Shall I tell you what though, darling, you've got a kind of pretty boyish face. I think bald can look hot when somebody's a bit more dilfy, like a Bruce Willis,
yeah,
Jason
totally,
Statham
totally
thing. And I love that kind of look, actually, but I can see how it wouldn't necessarily look great on you. But you know what? I know a guy who's really insecure about going bald, and he wears a hat all the time.
So I'm wondering if that could be the case here. Maybe there's a possibility that he feels a little bit insecure about his hair or something, and maybe that's why he doesn't want to take it off. I mean, I'm guessing. It might not be.
Yeah, but also, I mean, I don't want to, like, throw a shade on or anything, but... it's quite a basic, you know, it's quite a basic thing that she could discuss with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a new boyfriend. Yeah. You need to lay down the ground rules, and presumably communication, self-expression are policies that this guy wants to follow. I nearly said she then. This guy, he or she.
Yeah, we don't know.
Wants
but
to follow. I would suggest just bringing it up with him. How can I get him to take it off indoors? Well, ask why he wears it, maybe. I know that's a really boring, basic response.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be... You don't have to do it in a naggy, pestery way. You know, you can just bring it up in conversation. Like, oh, it's interesting that you always wear a cap. Is that a preference? Or, you know, yeah, something like that, I guess. So I hope you resolve this. But also, you know, it doesn't sound like the worst issue in the world.
No.
So, you know, it sounds like your relationship... If that's your biggest issue in your relationship, I think you're fine.
Is the sex good? That's
yeah,
what I want to know.
Sod the hat. How's the sex?
I know. If it's really good, yeah, you can wear what you want.
somebody else has emailed just saying, hey, Carl, loved your episode with Madam Storm, Would Love a Pet. So we had an incredible woman on the show called Madam Storm. And she was like, I think, international dominant... I forget her title, but she was a dominant... She was incredible, and she had several pets who would come and into her house and do her dishes and all of these other things. And to be honest, whoever's written this in and you're saying you would love a pet, I would also love a pet. I think it sounds like great fun. You know, I feel like you have to be a certain type of person, though. You have to have that kind of, like, I like to be dominating, but I think it's tricky in more regular day-to-day lives. I think out of the bedroom, that's when I kind of struggle.
I'm always intrigued by those relationships where one partner likes to be dominated in one context and then dominate in another. You know, so somebody might be very bossy and the leader in a relationship, but in the bedroom they like to be more submissive. I always find those things really intriguing.
Well, I've always, because when it comes to kind of sex and things, like particularly if it is BDSM, I know that myself, I like to be the dominating partner.
Oh, really?
However, when it comes to relationships and kind of like the emotional side of relationship, like, I think I prefer to be the little spoon. I prefer to have somebody to take care of me. And so, you know, I don't think you're... kind of your emotional wants and your sexual wants have to match up, because they definitely don't for me.
No, but shall I tell you one thing that's interesting? I saw a psychotherapist in my 30s for 5 years, and he was amazing. And he used to talk about sex a lot. And I remember him saying to me, when you are masturbating and therefore there's no limits to your fantasies, there's no kind of no other factors getting in there, it's just your fantasies. He said, what you think about in the moment that you come tells the story of your life.
Oh,
it's completely linked. The thing that most gets you off when you've no restrictions or limitations is determined by your psychological kind of development and what's going on there. It's interesting though, isn't it? And actually, if you think about gay sex, there's so many different things. I mean, just the top bottom thing, it's such a crucial thing that turns you on, whether it's both or one or the other. I mean, there's such different things that you're getting out of the sexual activity. And it is all linked to the way we see ourselves and...
Totally. So, you know, like, somebody should, like, do a... I'm sure studies have already been done on this, but, like, I would love to read a study on this.
So would I. I think we need to commission one ourselves.
Matt, that actually brings us to the end of the show.
Oh, no, and there's loads of sex confessions.
There's loads more sex confessions.
We'll have to read them off air.
We will indeed. Before we leave, I want to very briefly touch again on Madonna of Bolton. So what is the best way that people can support your book? Because I know the hardback is available right now. People can order it. People can buy it.
Yes, and it's out in ebook as well. It's not out in paperback till May, but it's out in hardback now. To be honest, I know you're supposed to direct people to bookshops, and you can get it in Waterstones and all the normal bookshops, but sometimes hardbacks are quite expensive. And on Amazon, the last time I looked, it had gone to less than a tenner, and I was quite pleased about that. Get it on Amazon, because basically you can save yourself a fiver.
Yeah, do it. And also people should follow you on your socials to find out when the paperback is coming out, and
fantastic.
Support you there as well, I think.
Yes, please, at Matt Cain Writer. I'm always on them. I need to post a picture of the two of us together as soon as I get off this.
Yes. Matt, you have been an absolutely amazing guest. It has been such a pleasure to have you. And I mean, I've wanted you to get you on for such a long time. And
thank you. Anytime. I've loved it.
And we also need to get together to cause some mischief soon, because...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Try and stop me.
Well, so that does bring us to the end of the show. And I am going to play you out with a new song. This is a little bit of Middle of a Heartbreak. And this is by Leland. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And thank you again, Matt. You've been a star. We'll see you all later. Bye.
Stay inside. No wild nights. Cause I know that I'll be thinking too much about you. Yeah. Won't go kiss stranger's lips, cause I know that I'll be talking too much about you. About you. And all that we used to do. I hate that I don't know you like I used to. Like I wonder, will we have this past summer? Will I have one that's better? Will I ever? Will I? I'm in the middle of a heartbreak. Middle of a heartbreak, yeah. I'm in the middle of a heartbreak. Middle of a heartbreak, yeah. Can't go dance. Don't make plans. Cause I know that I'll be looking all around for you. Oh yeah. On my worst days, there's no safe space. Cause everything I do and see reminds me about you. About you. And all that we used to do. I hate that I don't know you like I used to. Like I wonder, will we have this past summer? Will I have one that's better? Will I ever? Will I? I'm in the middle of a heartbreak. Middle of a heartbreak, yeah. I'm in the middle of a heartbreak. Need new shows when I'm sleeping. Need new songs on my stereo. Need new friends for the weekend. Need new shows when I'm sleeping. Need new songs on my stereo. I'm in the
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.